staying alive, so staying alive.
Sustaining Alive on 95BFM.
Come in, Rita Steele.
Hello, hello. How are you guys?
I'm good.
I'm also good. That's two goods.
That's double good.
Even though we spent the whole evening talking about dental mishaps, we're pretty good.
Oh, that's not good.
Wow, it's great, actually. Turns out it's fantastic.
Is the answer Thailand?
Is the answer...
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, actually. It turns out teeth are quite fragile, and usually versus concrete or something else, teeth lose. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, right. Gosh.
But also what we're learning is go to Fang. It sounds like a nice place to have a meal. And just on that, if you do go there, act responsibly and like a normal human. Are we talking tourist situations? Is that?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that I wasn't the only one that noticed the... lovely British tourists that have been in the country and causing havoc around the place.
What is their agenda? I want to know what in the itinerary we're like, all right, let's make sure we piss everyone off as well.
You know, what I've been wondering is how did they afford that? Like, do you think they've won a lottery or?
I don't know. I think I feel like maybe they've been followed with a camera crew or something, and this is a big joke, and it's going to be on TV over in England or something. Or this is...
And we've all been duped.
Old Farrier needs to get on board with this because it's kind of like a dark tourism situation, if you ask me.
Totally.
How much of an asshole can you be?
The tourists are the dark situation in this. But, yeah. Rita, on tourism, so what are this renegade family, what have they inspired you to think about?
Well, it definitely did inspire me to think about our tourism in general. So we often think about it as a very positive thing, and it is. And so I started to... crunching some numbers and having a look at what tourism actually means for us in our environment. So on the upside, there's lots of great economic stories that come out of tourism, as I'm sure everyone is aware, but the numbers are actually pretty cool. So directly only, they account for 1 in 7 jobs in New Zealand. So if you think about the indirect kind of impact on employment, it's significant. And although there's a lack of regional numbers combined, they're great regional jobs as well, which we don't have a lot of in New Zealand.
True, like if you've got a little town nearby, you can still get out there and make some kind of crazy abseiling situation that people like to climb on.
Yeah. Or even just coffee. I feel like coffee is the answer to lots of economic, like, you know, everyone needs coffee. Everyone needs coffee.
Everyone's taught themselves to need coffee. It's probably the best way to
International tourists are worth about $16 billion annually to us.
Excuse me, how much was it?
$16 billion.
John, that's
annually.
A lot.
That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money. And up to $34 billion when you include domestic tourists. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute because that's quite interesting. In a small time, our tourism industry has grown very quickly. So what we've actually seen is it's grown 1.2 million visitors in 5 years. So it was pre-2013, we saw about 2.5 million tourists every year, pretty consistently for a long time.
Do you know how long a tourist, like the average length, like what constitutes a visit in tourism realm? Like a month tops, or how does that work?
No, it is based on the tourist arrivals, and it can be
they say what they're doing. Right.
1 day to, yeah, exactly. So so it's pretty, you know, you're right, that needs to be defined quite well, but I do talk about that as well in a minute. So pre-2013, it was 2.5 million visitors, and then in 2013, something happened, and we started seeing an increase to 2.6 million. And then now, as of 2018, we're looking at 3.82 million. So there's been a huge jump. And during that time, I mean, everyone sort of can guess that I'm not the hugest fan of John Key, but during that time, he was the head of the tourism portfolio, and his plan for tourism was to double the growth of tourist numbers. And he was certainly on track to do that. But my feel is that there was very little strategic plan around how and where that growth was coming from.
I think it was partly like, let's get more people on my airline as well, kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it was a very business-like way to run a country.
That's
so let's double that industry. So, but there's lots of fallout of that. And I think you know, the cons here are things that we're starting to see in the news recently about, you know, bad, not just bad tourists, but, you know, the freedom campaign and the lack of infrastructure. And I mean, I think what we've got to think about the environment is what we're basically doing is we're almost doubling our population. It's about 77% of our population is the amount of tourists that we're seeing in here.
Wow,
that is
mind-blowing.
I think we're at 4.9 million and 3.82 on top of that in tourists.
Right.
So it is, you know, I mean, I don't need to rattle on the environmental impact of almost doubling the population. When we look at the impact of things, when we look at how much sewage does the city need, how much water does the city need, we don't think, oh, we need double that just in case we've got that many tourists.
True.
So, you know, that's a big problem for our environment.
Just on the freedom camping buzz, I wonder if, like, in the Lonely Planets and stuff, it just says, yeah, New Zealand's mint and totally easy for all that crap. And so the rumours just got out there and, like, you know, we just... You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because they're not even crafty at it. They'll just like camp right at the beach. Like, not like they won't go out of the way or anything. You know, they'll just camp like right in the Mintus car park at the beach. And it's like, come on, you're not even really trying now.
Yeah, totally. And they just roll out all their crap everywhere.
Yeah. Which is like, you know, fuck.
You just want to. You just yeah. There's some basic kind of. They're not very subtle about it.
That's
all.
Right.
And they're not all like that. I mean, we've also got to see that. But I mean, you're right. I think that we have built up a culture of freedom camping. And it would have been really where it came from was probably a very beautiful, innocent place. I don't know if you've been to Taranaki, but a lot of the farms at the end of their farms is the ocean, and so they've kind of just opened it up like, hey, you can come onto my property and access the ocean, and hey, I'll put a little fire pit down there for you, and there's a little portaloo, and it's quite cute and naive and beautiful.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're starting to look at, like, you know, doubling your population, and then you can't trust that everyone's going to do that right, or that the infrastructure is there for it, and that's what we're seeing. We're sort of seeing this backlash because, you know, it's our rates that are paying for these facilities and our tax dollars. And we're having to start funds. $8.5 million has just been announced by the central government to help fund some of this responsible camping, is what they're calling it. And DOC have said that they only cover 5% of their costs via user pay. So when you go and you book a walk in the huts, you're actually only paying 5% of what it costs to run it. I mean, that's insane. I mean, if you're going to, back to John Key running the country like a government, sorry, running the country like a business, then you don't go, oh, we're only going to cover 5% of our costs. you know, so it is a very bizarre situation. The other cons, not necessarily environmental, but it does put pressure on the environment, is that the employment's quite seasonal, so it does make living costs hard, and then all of a sudden you've got flow-on effects of that. And then that can have an effect on, you know, not the right, you know, sewage in the middle of summer, and, you know, not enough water in the middle of summer and that kind of thing. So it all sounds a little bit dire, but it is. Also, there's lots of other cons for pros for our environment. We probably...
John's listening now. John's tuned back in now. We're waiting for
him. Oh, yeah.
He's just a little bit sad, but he's coming back.
I was just thinking on your note then, what you're saying about it being highly seasonable, I guess that's kind of up to us to develop both winter 100%. And summer activities. And I think that's probably happening slightly more often now, especially in places like Aokuni, around the Central Plateau, where it's not all about skiing. There's also mountain biking down there and a lot of that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that I think, you know, that's what I talk about is having this. I don't think having this number of visitors is a bad thing. I just think that we need to be much more strategic about how we are developing this industry. And that's jumping to where I think the solution is. That's just it. It's about growing the right areas. And I look back at last season, the full season in 2017 that we've got data for, international spending was down almost 1%, but the numbers were up 9%. Now that to me tells me we're not developing the right area. We're developing cheap tourism and not, you know, the high-end tourism that we want to. So we really have to be strategic about this.
What's the cheap tourism and what's the high-end tourism?
I would say things like Freedom Camping are the cheap tourists.
Someone told me a yarn.
But I reckon those people have a lot of money though as well.
Someone told me a yarn about a Freedom Camper who came down here, had $3,000 in their pocket, was down here for about 2 months, spent $1,000 of it on a car, and spent the rest on 2-minute noodles and gas. Just drove around in the camp.
And the 17-year-old in me just goes, what a wonderful way to see a country. But, you know, from the environmental perspective, they're leaving their rubbish behind. They're putting pressure on, the environment from a sewage, from a water, from a
But that's
erosion.
Education, right? Can't we educate these people to what's a little campaign on the plane or something like that? Or what do you, how do you
Yeah, I mean,
it?
Look, I'm completely on board with at least a campaign on what to bring into the country
Maybe
and what not.
Backpackers, signs or something.
It's pretty hard to educate people to spend more money, but there is some areas that I think that we could develop, like ecotourism. And if you go to some of the most beautiful places in the world, they've developed that really well. So lots of places where, you know, there are low impact accommodation, so all off the grid, solar, reticulating water, that kind of thing. And I think that is I went to Costa Rica for a while and they've developed that really well, and it's expensive, but people get to experience the monkeys and the sloths in an environment that doesn't impact them. And I think about that, and I think, you know, we've got the yellow-eyed penguin, which is, on death's door. It's such a unique thing to see. Why is our tourism not protecting that? You know, that's where our tourism dollars should be going. And there's a whole industry there of people that would be really keen to come and see these animals in their natural environment without, impacting them too much. So I think that's an area that we really need to develop. And the other thing that we could do is look at permits or about a ballot system. So I've been to a couple of places, one in particular, Borneo, where there was a beautiful dive site, one of the top dive sites in the world. And what they do is they only let, I think it was 140 permits a day. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of islands around it. And so you basically have to sit on one of these islands around it on this ridiculous expensive accommodation, right, waiting for your ballot to come up. It was a way of increasing the length of stay.
We'll have so many things that you could do that with. There's like that lake that's got the cleanest water in the world in it, but you don't actually really want people out there mucking around by it.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting because I hear people say, oh, the last thing we want to do is put these people off, with the user pays. What if we charge, international tourists a little bit more to go on this walk than Kiwis? And, the rebuttal to that is, oh, these people might feel angry that they're being treated differently.
I mean, it's like that at the museum. I think you get in a little bit cheaper at the museum, if you're a local.
And I think what people have to realise, these people that are saying those sorts of things have to realise is that if people are spending literally thousands of dollars to fly here. That they're not the types of people that are going to kind of haggle over, an additional $25 to see one of the most beautiful walks in the world.
Especially with our little dollar, tiny little bloody dollar.
Yeah, our New Zealand peso.
Little bloody bugger.
So I think we really need to start looking at that kind of thing. The other thing I'll point out is that there was some pretty significant spending dollars in domestic tourism. So to me, that's an area that we really need to develop. And I am somebody that's a perfect example of this. I've probably seen 5% of New Zealand and seen a lot more of the world than that.
I'm right there with you.
And my days of freedom camping on 2-minute noodles are over. So I think that there's probably a big market in the domestic market that is untapped and willing to spend money in New Zealand, which they should be going after instead of us, heading overseas, using up carbon miles and then spending money in another country, which doesn't help us at all.
I watched an interesting TV show yesterday that was on terrestrial TV, and it was called Going South. And it's basically just these cameras that are fixed on trains and cars, and it just cruises down the road, just showing you the road, just driving down the road. And it drove through the Melbourne Sounds and stuff, tells you where it's going. No talking at all in this program. It was totally random. That's the future of TV, just ambient stuff that's on TV, and then I'll get my facts from the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was so rad though. They got on the boat, and then the next thing you're on the boat, and it's just showing a view of the boat. It's all first person stuff. It was so mad.
Interesting. Going
south.
Did you make it want to go, or were 100%. You I've seen that, done that?
No, 100% made me want to go. Big time made me want to go. I was like,
that's really cool.
But also, I was like, I'd never seen these roads before, so it was really cool, it was fucking cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think you're right. That kind of thing is, you know, there's so much of New Zealand that I see pictures of and I'm like, I want to go there. Mm. So,
you are there, you maniac.
I know. I just need to get on a train, right? yeah, slow tourism, I think that's called, when you, like, jump on trains and you take your time to do something instead of rushing.
Slow tourism. It's not very catchy, is it?
Lazy tourism? That doesn't really... We might need to coin some new phrases.
Stoned tourism.
We can... You know what? If we will never get through one of these without mentioning marijuana.
Fucking A. Welcome to the club, y'all.
Johnny mentioned boosting winter tourism. I'd love to hear people's ideas of boosting winter tourism. You're right. The carrot, man. If you've not seen the carrot, you haven't lived.
Well, once we get all the marijuana growing everywhere instead of the cows, we'll need people to come down and tend to the deck. All season round, right?
Yeah, I guess.
We'll need people to run
naked, more fun than
rub them
off cows
the hash and stuff like that. Great.
Yeah, then it'll be real slow tourism. We two birds, one stone. Oh, I see what I did there. that's bad. And the other thing, I mean, we talked a little bit about user pays as well. People don't mind. The other thing is that we need more data. You know, I was looking at some of the stuff and the data's all over the place. The poor regions, they don't really understand how many tourists are coming into their region, really.
Right,
so we just need some more data so we can actually make some more decisions and try and get that flow of tourism. At the moment, most people are coming in Auckland and Christchurch. Can we do a better job of spreading that out? Just more data so we can make those sorts of decisions and build a strategy around our tourism. And then finally, I always go on about this, but we need to find a way of valuing what makes us unique, valuing our environment. I know it sounds dirty to, you know, put an economic value on the beauty of our country, but if we don't, we will see it as worthless, basically.
Yeah, well, that's how it gets drawn into the conversation when you get into like Parliament and stuff, because you can go, look, it's worth this much, so whatever we do, we need to respect it this much, and that's kind of what's been lacking up.
Totally, and not necessarily, you know, how much is it worth by like going camping there, or you know, the actual hard cost.
No,
what about that soft cost? Like, what is it worth for someone in America to be able to go to a country, walk 10 minutes into the bush, and not see another human being? Mm. You know, because that's one day going to be gone, and I think we need to sort of go, actually, that's worth $100 for that person. Like, it might be imaginary money, but
it's priceless to the indigenous people of this country. Fair to say.
Well, 100%. It is priceless. What I worry about that is the moment you don't put a price on it, though, it becomes like priceless becomes equated in the Western world with worthless.
Yeah, I agree.
So it sounds dirty and disgusting. And when I first started, you know, learning about putting economic values on the intrinsic value of something, it felt disgusting.
But it has to compete. It has to.
Unfortunately, until we have that revolution that I'm trying to start. We're gonna have to look at that. You know, what is our endemic species worth? What is getting away from it all worth to people? So, you know, have a think about that next time you go somewhere. You know, I think about the fact that I'll drive further to a beach because it's a bit more isolated. You know, so all of a sudden, at least there's an opportunity cost of like the petrol and the, you know, so it is already in there what it's worth to you to get away from it all. But you just, you know, we haven't done it officially. Mm. Something I'd love to see happen.
Rita, that was a powerful sustaining life. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you next week.
See you soon. Bye.
Toodle.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95BFM.